This is WBUR's All Things Considered. I'm Jack Lepiarz.
I have a startup. What we do is provide tools for accelerated and personalized drug development and use in cancer.
BioBite is a contract research organization specialized doing preclinical assays in the zebrafish animal model.
We're a biomarker company, and we enable pharma and biotech companies to de-risk their compounds.
So my company is called Canomics, and essentially we are helping companies use our technology to design their formulations.
More than 700 scientists and business people from all over the world turned up at a recent weekly meetup in Cambridge called the Venture Cafe. Like them, so many of us have dreamed of startup glory, founding the next Facebook or Snapchat. You have an idea, work insanely hard for a few years, and then cash out. Today, in our BioBoom series, correspondent Karen Weintraub tells us that would-be biotech entrepreneurs have different motivations and face different challenges, including a high likelihood of failure every step of the way.
Startups are an engine driving the BioBoom. There are hundreds in Greater Boston, and at places like Cambridge's Venture Cafe, it's easy to find enthusiasm for the startup life.
This is the best chance that you have of working on something where your individual contributions lead to the bettering of somebody's life. You are sacrificing to make their life better.
David Saxner, a 28-year-old consultant, says that's the upside of biotech startups. His friend, 28-year-old Patsy Freeland, saw the downside firsthand one awful day a few years ago.
All 60 of us were in a room one day, and they just sat us down and they said, "This is the end. We've sold it. Everybody, your last paycheck's in the back. Like, pack up your box and please leave." And that was the last day.
This kind of failure is just part of the startup life, Freeland says. No one seems to know just how many biotechs there are here or what the rate of failure is. But it's widely accepted that failures vastly exceed successes.
But you know that you have to be prepared for that kind of risk.
Here in Kendall Square, biotech entrepreneurs know that the timeline for success will be longer than developing the latest version of, say, Candy Crush. But before they roll up their sleeves...
The key to starting a fabulous company is to have a fabulous idea. I mean, I know that sounds so obvious, but you'd be surprised how many ideas are not fabulous, right?
That's Abby Selnicker, a partner at the venture capital firm Third Rock Ventures.
I think it's really about having something that you know is going to have a big impact, you know isn't going to hit some unmet need, and you have an idea of how you're going to get there.
The first major hurdle for biotech startups is raising money from someone like Selnicker. They need it to prove out their science, first in test tubes, then in lab animals, and finally in people. More than $3 billion in venture capital poured into Massachusetts biotech companies in 2017 alone, with the promise of big payouts to come. But getting funds is still a challenge for every startup, Selnicker says.
There's a very discerning eye put on what is it about this company that's going to allow it to succeed? What do they know? What have they put into place to minimize the risk?
That puts intense pressure on people working for startups. They want their ideas to work, and they have to repay investors. Michael Gilman is a scientist and entrepreneur.
It's an existential problem for us, right? We had to figure it out or we were all going home, you know, with empty pockets, right? And that sort of focus and the passion that you build as a result of that focus is really what drives problem solving.
But even with the best science and plenty of money, an idea can take decades to make it from the lab to the medicine cabinet. Robert Langer is an institute professor at MIT.
I mean, the classic example for me, you know, when I was a postdoc with Judah Folkman, we published a paper in Science, which was the isolation of the first angiogenesis inhibitor.
It took 28 years for the drug referenced in that paper to be approved to fight cancer.
And that was Avastin, which is still one of the largest selling drugs in history.
Langer has been called the Edison of medicine. He's helped start 40 biotech companies in nearly as many years. And in Kendall Square, he's considered the king of startups. Langer says every startup has to confront a laundry list of obstacles.
Those obstacles can be scientific criticism, difficulty getting grants, manufacturing hurdles, regulatory hurdles, clinical trials not necessarily going well, having difficulty raising money. I mean, on and on. I mean, it doesn't stop.
But perhaps the biggest challenge for people involved in startups, Langer says, is picking yourself up after you've failed. After receiving his doctorate, he was rejected by every university he applied to. His first 9 grant proposals got turned down. He still remembers the pain.
And in fact, I've always said that the people who often do the best are the ones that are good at dealing with failure. I mean, success is easy to deal with. I mean, anybody can do that.
And no one escapes failure, venture capitalist Abby Selnicker says. Nor should they.
If you want to innovate, you have to be willing to fail. And if you don't fail, you're probably not really innovating.
Selnicker says she had a company fail after going all the way through hugely expensive trials and patients.
But am I glad I tried? Absolutely. Did I learn a lot? Absolutely. Did the patients learn a lot? Did the next innovator learn a lot? Absolutely. It's part of what we do.
Bob Langer says he counters his own failures by finding joy wherever he can. For him, that's often at the front of a classroom.
If one of my students gets a great job offer, if we get a grant, if we get a paper in a good journal, you know, it makes me very happy. Even teaching a class, you know, giving a lecture and students laughing at my jokes, I mean, that makes me feel happy.
Despite his past failures, he's still really excited about starting companies based on his science.
I just think it's a really exciting life.
After she got laid off from her startup a few years ago, Patsy Freeland has retreated to the relative safety of a management consulting job. Her next plan is to go to business school. Maybe she'd be willing to try another startup someday.
The idea that you really get to suddenly make an impact in a place where you see that there's a need and that you can so directly do that, there's nothing like that.
Around Kendall Square, there are plenty of people like Freeland who think nothing but a startup will be as fulfilling. Their enthusiasm helps fuel the bio boom. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Karen Weintraub.
On our website, you'll find all the stories from our Bio Boom series, charts, maps, and video at WBUR.org. Tomorrow on WBUR's Morning Edition, Carrie Goldberg leads us on an expedition to study the tribes of Kendall Square, Cambridge.
Each of these are little subcultures unto themselves, and they all have their own dress codes, and they all have their own way of speaking, and, you know, they like to get together and start life science companies.
Funding for Common Health's BioBoom series provided by Charles River Discovery, scientists who partner to drive your drug discovery with a shared vision of successful therapies. CharlesRiverDiscovery.com.